From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. With the news last week that Sacramento is closing seven of its public elementary schools, there's been an undercurrent of conversation that private or charter schools will take over some of the campuses. Now, none of this is substantiated at this point, but the talk made us wonder about alternative education styles and their appeal. So today and tomorrow, we're focusing on two different systems, Waldorf today, Montessori tomorrow. Did you or your child have a Waldorf experience? If so, we're interested, and I ask maybe that you'll tweet me about it at Cap Radio Ruyak. Meanwhile, in studio with me is Nancy Poor. She is a founder and a teacher at Rudolf Steiner College, which is located just outside of Sacramento, where Waldorf teachers are trained. Nancy's also a national voice on Waldorf education. It's a pleasure to welcome you to Insight.
Thank you, Beth.
When people hear Waldorf, what do you think they imagine?
Well, I'm sure they imagine many different things from a creative artistic school to children with special issues to highly gifted to, the range of things. But it is a spiritual-based education as well, because Steiner gave it for body, soul, and spirit. And we, we're more than just a body and intellect, but our highest social moral capacities really need nurturing. And so this is an approach with reverence for life, reverence for the natural world and for one another, and a universal human being. And that's why it has its appeal all over the world.
Rudolf Steiner is the man who founded the school back in 1919?
He did, out of the concerns of World War I. How can we build a movement for peace? How can we address all peoples, all religions, all races and backgrounds to give what is needed? And Beth, I would say the unique aspect of Waldorf education is that we're not only dealing just with body, mind, intellect development, but we are dealing with the evolution of consciousness. That is, how does the child awaken to themselves and awaken to the world? And then how do we create a curriculum that's going to mirror and reflect that so they're fully engaged in their education and excited about learning?
In some ways, the world has changed a lot since 1919, and that was Germany. And here we are in the United States. The schools are in 60 countries all over the world. How does what you just described translate to reading, writing, arithmetic, technology?
Right. Exactly. Well, we've been human for a long, long time, and there's certain stages of growth. For example, In this country, schools are 17th in the world. In Finland, they're number one in all ways. So we approach it like they do in Finland, where they do not pressure young children with early testing, grading, and competition, because we want to learn to appreciate one another, but also emphasizing play. Because if you want a creative, innovative, critical thinker and engaged person as an adult, you want good, intense, healthy play where they're exercising their imagination, one of their most important qualities, and they're in control, they're in charge. And so this is why we emphasize that with young children. Don't start the formal learning till the brain is more mature,
and
around
that includes
7 or 8.
Even reading.
Because once there's sound studies that show a child that learns to read at 5 is no more advantage than one that learns to read at 7.
Could you describe the experience of coming into a Waldorf school and sending your young child to school? They walk into the classroom. I've always been under the impression that all age groups learn together, or that multiple age groups learn together.
No,
not true.
Not the case. No, because they're developmentally really together and into their age groups. However, you will find sort of universal engagement through the arts, through the artistic presentation of the teacher, be it reading or math, and the teacher is accompanying those children through those early grades. And again, because it's so enlivened, they're addressing both sides of the brain, the analytical left side and the more global artistic right side. So the child is fully engaged, a lot of movement, a lot of artistic activity.
In fact, the art emphasis is probably the centerpiece or the heavy emphasis, isn't it?
Well, it's that all learning should be permeated with art. That is really where we are fully human and fully expressing our gifts.
So let's go back to that 6-year-old maybe or 7-year-old before mm-hmm. they've added in some of the other structured subjects. What's that day going to comprise? And I won't see a computer in the classroom at that age, will I?
You don't. Although our graduates are awesome with computers because they are so good at creative critical thinking and they're prized in the computer world. No, this is education from the inside out. We want them to be strong and creative. By the time they've graduated, they've planted a garden, they've sewn a shirt, they've taken wool from the sheep to a scarf, they've bound a book, you know, made a wooden spoon, they've sung in a choir, 2 world languages, 2 instruments, original poetry, so that they know how to do things in the world and they're engaged in their subject. And this then goes along with all the academic learning that's enlivened. And I could give you an example, if you want, of what it means to have the outside match the inside awareness.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Would you like that? Mm-hmm. So if we look at 6th grade, which we can remember pre-adolescent, when we were maybe anxious about growing up, mm-hmm. but also a little brassy and sassy, trying mm-hmm. ourselves out. So we give them a block in Rome, ancient Rome. And there they can meet not only the aggression and the arrogance, but they also meet courage and they meet a justice system because the Romans brought in the first civil rights and citizen justice. And then just as they go into adolescence, there it's not just physical puberty, it's soul awakening of their own journey, of who they're going to be and how they're going to make it. So we mirror it with the great discoveries, with the discoveries in science and technology, with the Renaissance of this beauty and blooming of the human being. And then we give them a block in rebellions.
Can I pause you there? When you
sure.
say give them a block in Rome, are you organizing students? Are you creating something in models? Be more specific
yes.
about the exercise.
They learn in blocks of learning on a subject. So there's subject learning for 3 or 4 weeks
okay.
at a time. And so, but how cool is that to give revolutions just at 14.
Yeah, you're trying to give life application history for the
absolutely.
Experience that is making them crazy in middle school. Is that the right way to say it?
So they feel met. You see, when a young person feels met and acknowledged, then their education is relevant. It's not just a body of facts that they have to memorize for a test.
When does testing begin?
The testing can begin, you know, with spelling and things in 4th grade and so forth, but not the formal testing. And by the time they're in 8th grade, they're doing quite well on the tests. And by the time they're in college, I mean in high school, they've had, you know, world governments, world literature, world religions, world philosophies. And what we're looking for is resilient, capable, a global awareness, and ready to take their capacities out into life.
I'm speaking with Nancy Poor. She is a founder and teacher at Rudolf Steiner College outside Sacramento, where Waldorf teachers are trained. She has 6 children who went through the Waldorf school education system and 14 grandchildren who have gone through Waldorf schools around the world. Let me go through a couple quick questions. Do you consider this a private school?
We wish it could be available for every child. And so they have to be independent for us to bring this education in its depth. However, there are three public charter schools here in Sacramento itself.
That are Waldorf curriculum.
That are Waldorf schools, Alice Birney, Golden Valley, and then George Washington Carver, which is just 5 years old and has made, and in a less affluent part of town, and made amazing strides in 5 years.
I am under the impression that the curriculum or the tuition, I'm sorry, can be higher in some cases than a Catholic school education, but it varies from school to school?
It, you know, there's always a striving for scholarships. I can't speak to the Catholic school.
And a next question, is there a protocol within the Waldorf system to deal with learning disabilities, autism, some of the challenges that, of course, every school system faces?
Some children, of course, obviously need special additional care. But the curriculum itself, because it is so beautifully geared to the child's developmental stages, even children with issues can find a home and be met. They may, of course, need extra work, and that, you know, can take place outside the classroom. But they can thrive in this system more than those where they're pressured with testing and competitive issues.
Friends have described to me many times that the experience of Waldorf is far beyond the school grounds or the location, that it's really a lifestyle that the family lives by.
They can often take it up. When my young grandson went to school, his father said to me, "Now we have to deal with the fact that he comes home singing all the time." So, yes, this joy in life, creativity, healthy lifestyle, obviously, to food and caring about, you know, environment, you bet.
But your child also bringing conscientious choices to the family, perhaps. Let's not use this plastic bag. Let's not make this choice in clothing.
Yes, certainly those things. I mean, those would be an aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But a healthier life, you know, technology is a tool. It's not a life. And so how do we build a healthy, human, engaged, creative life, even though we have all these wonderful tools? But we're going to be on computers for a lifetime. We need to save childhood.
It's a wonderful quote, Nancy. Technology is a tool. It's not a life. I do want you to mention, and I said there are many, many schools, not only in Northern California, but around the world. But what has happened with some of the graduates? Mm-hmm. What have these children gone on to do?
Probably, you know, about 90% of them go to college, and they're prized for their critical thinking and their creativity, certainly in all aspects. But we're not emphasizing fitting them to fit into some industrial economic slot. We want to develop their gifts so that when they go out, they can bring what they love, what they're skilled at, and hopefully innovations for the future. So we're going to find everything from people in computers, doctors, to dancers, to airline pilots, boys and girls, to chefs, to karate experts, to green architects and builders, writers, editors, entertainers. Actually, the lead of the popular band Cake is a Waldorf graduate here in town.
Yeah, we hope to pick up that conversation later this year when they do a little performing in the area.
So we have, they're conscientious parents. They can be engaged in their community and every worthy endeavor of human life.
Do parents ultimately come to Waldorf because they don't want to be in the public school system as it exists now? Or do they come because of what Waldorf offers? Do you understand my distinction?
I think it can be both, Beth. I certainly can't speak for all individual parent choice, but often it's their children who lead them there because they try it and they thrive.
You didn't mention sports, but I do remember a very successful basketball team. Weren't they state champs a couple of years ago?
Oh, yes. Our youngest son was on one of those teams, and they had a leading scorer last year. So, yes, they excel as athletes.
Well, let's wrap this up just with a thought that you have Nancy, from the Waldorf perspective, as you look at what's going on in the public school system, as you see this conversation about the closure of public schools in this district and the discussion of charter and alternatives, what thoughts does that give you?
It's hard to say. You know, there may be some more choices for charter schools as well. As I say, George Washington Carver is highly successful. And so I cannot predict how that will happen, but it would be wonderful if we have as many children as possible have access to this. And at the college, which has a beautiful campus with a biodynamic farm, you know, garden and all that, and many programs, part-time, full-time master's programs for teachers, for public school teachers in the summer, so they can renew their art, and courses in everything from, you know, beekeeping to making dolls in preschool and consciousness studies. but that we have the five independent schools, Placerville, Cedar Springs, Live Oak in Auburn, a Camellia in Sacramento, Davis Waldorf School in Sacramento, as you mentioned, the largest. And then we have these other charter schools. So we're very rich, and we hope that there'll be choices and support for families everywhere. We have a phrase, receive the child in reverence, educate in love, and send forth in freedom.
Nancy, thank you for the conversation.
Thank you, Pat.
Nancy Poor is a founder of Rudolf Steiner College in Fair Oaks and a national voice on the Waldorf education. We have more information for you at capradio.org/insight and tomorrow, Montessori schools. Remember to tweet me about your experience at Cap Radio Ruyak. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio.